Welcome to the Mind Machine Chronicles, where we dive headfirst into the most fascinating corners of the tech universe. No safety gear required. And today, well, let's just say we're grabbing our philosophical hard hats and spelunking into a question that's been keeping, well, let's face it, philosophers and sci-fi nerds up at night for what seems like forever. Are we, and I mean this quite literally, are we living in a simulation? Yeah, I know, it sounds like we're about to queue up another Matrix marathon, but trust me on this. This isn't just a rerun. We're going deep, deep, deep into the mind of Nick Bostrom, a philosopher who takes this whole "are we simulated" question to a whole other level of whoa. And because navigating the philosophical matrix is no easy feat, we've got our very own expert on all things mind and machine joining us for this deep dive. So buckle up, because things are about to get seriously meta. Now, before we even attempt to dip our toes into the simulation hypothesis, we need to at least try to wrap our heads around a future where, well, humanity's tech skills have reached a point where whipping up a simulation isn't just about, you know, creating a convincing sunset under the EO game. We're talking about universes, full-blown universes, teeming with beings who are, well, let's just say, blissfully unaware that their entire reality is just, well, a really, really convincing computer program.
Exactly. And it's not about some, you know, basic run-of-the-mill video game AI we're talking about here. The crux of this whole mind-bending idea is that these simulated beings would be conscious, experiencing their world just like we do, totally oblivious to the fact that they're part of, well, let's just call it a really, really sophisticated computer program.
So hold on a second. We're talking about simulations so spot on, so hyper-realistic that even the beings inside, and we're talking beings with thoughts, feelings, the whole shebang, wouldn't even suspect a thing. But let's be real for a second. How on earth, or should I say, in the vast expanse of cyberspace, could we even begin to create something even remotely that complex?
Oh, well, that's where things get really interesting. See, the whole simulation hypothesis hinges on this idea, and it's a big one, that consciousness, you know, that feeling of being, of experiencing, well, it might not be limited to these squishy biological brains of ours. There's this concept, kind of a mind blower in its own right, called substrate independence, and it basically throws open the doors to the possibility that any system, and I mean any system, whether it's neurons firing away in our skulls or silicon chips humming in some futuristic supercomputer, could, in theory, give rise to conscious experience. The catch, it's got to be able to replicate the right kind of computational processes, the nitty-gritty stuff that makes consciousness, well, conscious.
Okay, so we're not talking about your grandpa's dusty old computer in the attic, right?
Yeah.
We're talking about some next-level, mind-bogglingly powerful tech that could make our current gizmos look like, well, I don't know, cave drawings.
Yeah, you can't. Well, civilization's so advanced, so far beyond anything we can currently imagine, that they make our current technological prowess look like, well, let's just say child's play.
So, like Star Trek on steroids.
Think more along the lines of a civilization that's harnessed the power of entire galaxies, maybe even figured out how to manipulate the fabric of space-time itself.
Okay, I'm starting to get a headache just trying to picture that. But I'm with you. We're talking about a hypothetical post-human civilization with tech so advanced, it would make our current gadgets look like, well, stone tools. But let's get specific here. Paint me a picture. How powerful are we talking about when we throw around terms like post-human technology?
Okay, try to wrap your head around this. Imagine a computer, but we're not talking about some clunky desktop setup. No, we're talking a computer the size of a sugar cube. That's right, a sugar cube. Capable of performing a 1021 operations every single second. That's a one with 21 zeros after it, a number so big it pretty much breaks the human brain.
Okay, my brain is officially broken, but I'm intrigued. Keep going.
Now, take that mind-bending sugar cube supercomputer and scale it up, way up to the size of a planet. We're talking a planetary mass computer, a cosmic behemoth of processing power, potentially capable of reaching, get this, 10,042 operations per second.
Okay, I'm officially lost in the sea of zeros here, but I'm assuming that's a lot of processing power.
A lot. That's an understatement of, well, cosmic proportions. We're talking about a level of computational power that could not only simulate an entire universe down to the smallest quantum blip, but also recreate, get this, the entire mental history of every single human being who's ever walked the earth, and not just once, oh no, multiple times.
Oh, scroll on, back up a second. We're talking simulating every thought, every dream, every embarrassing childhood memory, every existential crisis, every cup of coffee ever consumed by every single human who's ever lived. I mean, that's just, it's mind-boggling. It's like trying to fit the entire ocean into a teacup.
It is mind-boggling. It's awe-inspiring. It's enough to make you question the very fabric of reality. And that, my friend, is precisely Bostrom's point. He argues that if simulations of this magnitude are even remotely possible, and his calculations, those mind-bending equations, suggest they are, it leads us to a fascinating, and let's face it, slightly terrifying crossroads. He calls it the trilemma.
A trilemma? Is that like a dilemma but with an extra shot of existential dread?
You could say that. It's a situation where at least one of three possibilities has to be true. No ifs, ands, or buts about it.
Okay, you've piqued my curiosity. Lay it on me. What are these three mind-bending possibilities?
Yeah. All right, so possibility number one. Civilizations like ours, you know, the kind that dream of spaceships and artificial intelligence and maybe figuring out how to make a decent cup of coffee in zero gravity, well, they almost always hit a wall, a major roadblock. Bostrom calls it the great filter, and it's basically this hypothetical barrier that prevents civilizations from reaching, well, let's just say a level of technological sophistication that would make our current achievements look like, well, you get the picture.
So what you're saying is we're all just cosmically hardwired to self-destruct before we reach level two of technological enlightenment.
Option two takes a slightly different turn. It suggests that those super advanced post-humans, those masters of the cosmos, they're out there, they exist, but, and this is a big but, they have absolutely zero interest in creating these ancestor simulations.
Zero interest. Like they wouldn't even spare a bite for a quick peek at how their primitive ancestors used to live.
Maybe they've moved on to bigger and better things, you know, like interdimensional travel or having tea parties with black holes.
Okay, I'll bite. What's the third option, the one that's going to make my brain melt?
Well, that's the real kicker. Option three is where things get really, really interesting. And by interesting, I mean, whoa. It's the idea that a huge chunk, and I mean a huge e-chunk, of beings, you know, beings like us having experiences like ours, well, they're not actually out there in some real physical universe. They're, get this, living in a simulation.
Okay, hold up a sec. Rewind that. Are you saying there's a chance, a real chance, that we're not actually here, like, at all?
That's the gist of it, yeah. The simulation hypothesis, and it's a doozy, proposes that the odds of us and everything we perceive around us being part of some incredibly complex, incredibly convincing computer program, well, those odds are way, way higher than you might think.
Okay, my brain's officially a pretzel, but let's try to untangle this simulation knot one strand at a time. So we've got these three possibilities, each one more mind-blowing than the last, and you're saying at least one of them has to be true. Let's start with option one, the great filter. Now, I'm not exactly a physics whiz, so is this filter like some kind of cosmic bug zapper? Only instead of, you know, zapping bugs, it zaps entire civilizations.
Not exactly a bug zapper, but I get where you're coming from. Think of it more like, I don't know, a cosmic speed bump. But instead of just rattling your car, it completely obliterates any civilization that tries to, well, let's just say, level up too quickly on the technological ladder.
So we're talking about something that prevents civilizations from reaching their full potential, kind of like a cosmic kill switch.
Exactly. And the really unsettling part is that we have no idea what this filter might be. It could be something we inflict on ourselves, like some kind of runaway artificial intelligence that decides humans are, you know, surplus to requirements.
Okay, now you're just being scary.
Or it could be something completely out of left field, something we haven't even dreamed up in our wildest sci-fi fantasies. The point is, it's out there, or at least that's the idea, this invisible barrier that civilizations like ours are destined to slam into.
Okay, I'm officially terrified.
Right.
But in the interest of facing our cosmic fears head on, let's move on to option two.
Uh-huh.
Post-humans, they're out there, living their best cosmic lives, but they couldn't care less about simulating us. I mean, I get it. If I were a super advanced being with, like, galaxies at my fingertips, I'm not sure I'd be spending my time creating simulations of, you know, humans arguing over parking spaces.
Right. It's like trying to get a kid who's discovered the wonders of virtual reality to go back to playing with action figures. Option two suggests that as civilizations evolve, their values, their interests, maybe even their understanding of what it means to exist, well, it changes. Maybe even beyond our comprehension.
So you're saying we might outgrow our fascination with our own past, like maybe post-humans are so far beyond us that our little human dramas just wouldn't even register on their radar.
Precisely. They might see us as, well, I don't know, like ants going about our ant business. Interesting to observe for a while, but not exactly something you'd want to recreate in a simulation.
All right, fair enough. But that leaves us with option three, the one that really makes my head spin.
Mm-hmm.
The simulation hypothesis.
Yeah.
What if we are just lines of code in some cosmic computer program? What does that even mean? Like, is our reality just some elaborate video game being played by some, I don't know, interdimensional teenager with too much time on their hands?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? And the answer, or at least the best answer we can come up with right now, is We don't know. But what we can do is explore the implications, the mind-blowing, reality-bending implications of what it would mean if our universe and everything in it were just a simulation, a really, really convincing simulation.
Okay, hit me with it. What are we talking about here?
We're talking about a fundamental shift in our understanding of reality itself. Imagine that everything we perceive, everything we experience, is just information, data being processed by some unimaginably complex system.
So, like, instead of atoms and quarks and all that jazz, it's just ones and zeros.
Essentially, yes. Now imagine that this system, this cosmic computer, if you will, is so advanced that it can simulate not just the physical laws of the universe, but also consciousness itself, the feeling of being, of experiencing.
Okay, now my brain is officially fried.
It's a lot to wrap your head around, but here's the kicker. If simulated beings, and remember, we're assuming they'd be just as conscious, just as convinced of their own reality as we are, if they could in turn create their own simulations, well, it kind of creates this endless hall of mirrors, simulations within simulations, each one as real, as complex as the last.
So we could be living in a simulation within a simulation within a simulation, and so on, like those Russian nesting dolls. But instead of dolls, it's universes.
Exactly. And it raises this question of, well, what's the original, the real reality, the one that all these simulations are built on?
And more importantly, who or what created it? Are we talking about some kind of super intelligent alien race, a bored deity, a cosmic toddler with a really, really advanced computer game?
Honestly, your guess is as good as mine. Bostrom himself doesn't speculate about the nature of these hypothetical simulators, and maybe that's for the best. The simulation argument, at its core, is more about exploring the possibilities, the philosophical implications, rather than providing any definitive answers.
Okay, so if we can't even tell for sure if we're living in a simulation, why does it even matter?
Ah, because even entertaining the possibility, even if it seems completely out there, it has the potential to change how we think, how we act, how we see our place in, well, whatever this reality we're in actually is.
It's not about nailing down a definitive answer,
yeah,
is it?
Exactly.
It's more like wrestling with the what-ifs, the could-it-bes, and then figuring out, well, what does it all mean for us little old humans?
Now you're getting it. See, Bostrom's trilemma isn't some kind of cosmic gotcha. It's not about proving once and for all that we're all just living in some kind of elaborate computer program. It's more like a thought experiment, a nudge to get us thinking outside our usual boxes, our preconceived notions about reality, about our place in the grand scheme of things.
Okay, I'm on board with the whole thought experiment thing, but let's be real for a second. Even if we entertain this possibility, this idea that we might be simulated beings, it still feels like we're stuck in this weird philosophical limbo. If we can't know for sure, if there's no way to peek behind the curtain and see the cosmic code, so to speak, does it really change anything?
Ah, but that's the beauty of it. Even without a definitive answer, the very act of asking the question, of grappling with the possibility, however mind-bending it might seem, it forces us to confront some really, really big questions.
Like what kind of questions? Give me an example.
Well, for starters, if our reality, the one we experience every day, is just one level, one layer in a potentially infinite hierarchy of existence, what does that mean for our understanding of, well, everything? What does it mean for our search for meaning, for purpose in a universe that might be, well, fundamentally different from what we thought it was?
It's enough to make you spiral, right? This idea that everything we thought we knew, everything we hold dear, might be, I don't know, just a blip on some cosmic computer screen.
It's a mind-bending concept, no doubt about it, and it challenges us to re-examine everything. Our assumptions, our values, even our very understanding of what it means to be human in a reality that might be, well, a lot more fluid, a lot more layered than we ever imagined.
So if you had to boil it all down, this whole simulation argument, what's the takeaway? What do you want our listeners to walk away with?
I think the most important takeaway, the one that really matters, is this. Even if we can't ever definitively know, even if we never find that cosmic signature that screams simulation, the very act of considering the possibility, of wrestling with the implications, it has this incredible power to change us.
You're saying it's not just about changing how we think about the universe. It's about changing how we actually live our lives.
Exactly.
Okay, I'm starting to see it now. It's like, if you knew, even if there was just a tiny, tiny chance that someone or something was watching, observing your every move, wouldn't you at least try to make your life a little more, I don't know, interesting, a little more, I don't know, meaningful?
Yeah.
You know, just in case.
It definitely adds a whole new layer to the whole you only get one life thing, doesn't it?
No kidding. Well, I think we've given our listeners a lot to chew on today. Maybe we are just figments of some hyper-advanced civilization's imagination. Maybe we're not. Who knows?
The mystery continues.
It really does. And hey, maybe that's part of the fun of it all, right? This whole simulation hypothesis, it's full of these mind-blowing possibilities, these what-ifs that keep you up at night. And on that note, I think it's time for us to unplug from the simulation, at least for now. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive into the simulation argument. It's been, well, let's just say a wild ride.
Anytime.
And to all of you out there in podcast land, keep those minds open, keep those questions coming, and we'll catch you on the flip side for another mind-bending exploration of the tech universe. Until then, keep questioning, keep exploring, and remember, the truth is out there, somewhere.